Welcome back to the Challenge Final Reckoning Wrap Up Podcast, episode 12. I am Brian Cohn. With me, as always, is my co-host, Al Escher. Alex, how are you?
I'm doing well. There's not that I don't love podcasting every week, but there is something refreshing about taking 1 week off and coming back to the season with fresh eyes.
Yeah, a little recharging the batteries. You know, take 1 week off, ready to go, down the stretch. As the preview said a couple weeks ago, we're closing in on the finale 2 months from now, so we're ready to go.
Oh, this is something interesting. Jonathan Foreman, who should be at my apartment in the next 2 hours for the Survivor premiere, they put out a casting call for the audience of the reunion, and he was like, wait, if they're not even filming the reunion for like 3 weeks from whenever they posted this, it must be forever from now. But correct me if I'm wrong, the reunion films like 2 weeks or so before it airs, right? Or only a couple weeks before it airs.
I would say about, maybe 2 or 3, something like that.
Okay, so now, like, I was excited to see the posting for the reunion. Some people were like, oh my God, it's not going to be for another, like, 6 months. I'm like, no, wait, if they're doing the reunion, we're hot on the trail at the end.
Oh, yeah. Guess there's a light at the end of the tunnel, so that's positive.
Are you fine to be in the audience of the reunion?
I will not be. I've done that a couple times. It is a long day. Just something to check off the bucket list. I don't need to attend it again.
I don't know if that story's like we talked about on the podcast before. If we have, it's not recent. But I'm still mad at you for that. I don't even know if you remember what I'm talking about.
Mad at me for what? Going to the reunion?
Yeah, Brian went to the reunion. Now I'm talking to the audience. Went to the reunion, got spoiled on the end, and then continued to do the podcast as though he didn't see the entire thing play out.
Oh, yeah,
that was early on.
Yeah, but I was pretty good. Like, that's the point. You didn't know I was spoiled. So I did pretty well.
I didn't know you were spoiled. Right. But I could say, like, you don't know I'm spoiled, and I could just say all these things. Like, you don't know someone's spoiled when they're just, like, right about everything. I don't know that you were right or not. I don't remember the acting level. I just remember being aghast.
I'm pretty sure I was still the level acting level. So I had that going for me.
But it's not like you were like, I'm not spoiled. You weren't lying about it. You were just making remarks.
Yeah, well, I was young. I was a young podcaster at the time. I didn't know the core, like the protocol. So I was willy-nilly. I was like, oh, I'll go to the reunion. Sure, why not?
I also was a young podcaster who cared then. Now if you tell me you're going to the reunion, I'd be like, great, let's spoil it. What happened at the reunion?
We can just fast forward to the end.
Just kidding. I really have no idea what's going to happen this season, which is exciting. Gotta keep it fresh.
It's spring. Very spring.
This is also, you watched, as a normal person would do, you watched the episode last week, and the episode this week. I watched them both this week, and because I gotta stay fresh. And if you thought the cliffhanger of Cam and Kara eating was, like, annoying 2 weeks ago, it's very underwhelming to then start 2 weeks later to be like, oh, wait, who won this challenge two weeks ago?
I don't know if I discussed this with you. I think it might have been like a Mike Bloom discussion where we said, like, the challenge, like, nowadays is really built just to, like, binge it all in one shot with the way it stops and starts and, like, with the weird cutoff. It's not really even meant anymore as, like, a week-to-week show. It's meant as here's 12 episodes, just go do your thing.
I don't know that they mean it as that. I still think the cliffhangers are to get you to come back next week. Like, I don't know that they're, like, intending it to be consumed that way.
No, I don't think they're intending it. I think it's better for the consumer to consume it all in one shot. I don't think that's their intention. I kind of think just that's, like, the output.
I also think everything, controversial opinion, everything is better when you consume it on a binge watch whenever you want.
I think some shows are more fun week to week. I think, like, the digestion of an episode, the discussion, I think there's some shows that are built week to week and others, like, I would say, like, I would not get nearly as much pleasure out of, like, a Survivor season if I watched it all in one shot as opposed to week to week.
I binge a Survivor season. I enjoy it. I said this on the RHAP B&B, but I'm, like, on the record. I only would watch Big Brother in a binge unless I have to do something podcast related about it. Like when I get Matt Liguori's text, I know I have to catch up for, like, the last 6 episodes. or live tweeting incentives. But I was a fan of the challenge on a binge-to-binge basis before we podcasted about it. I would maybe watch 5 episodes at a time, catch up on the DVR 3 episodes later. So I'm a big fan of that kind of consumption. I mean, maybe it's more of their psychology of it. Like, are you a person who likes delayed gratification? Because I have spoiled 2 of the 3 seasons of Love Island I've watched, and I only haven't spoiled the 3rd season because I'm not far enough in yet. But I get so invested wanting to know where the people are now, not even if they're still together. I just want to know what these people are doing, that I've accidentally spoiled the winner of both seasons by, like, being on their Instagram. Like, I just can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. I think, to me, I'm like the middle ground. I think there's certain things. I'm with you. Give me all one shot, like a Netflix murder documentary thing. Give me all one shot. Other shows, I like the gradual reveal of it. But I don't know. Maybe there's a psychology class that could be, we can delve into more of that.
Yeah, let's delve into these episodes. While we're here, I guess we should maybe talk about that.
I guess so. So we could touch on a few of the highlights from last week, if you want.
A very few highlights. I thought nothing happened this episode. Like, it was very fortuitous that this was the episode we had to miss, because I was stunned that people were tweeting, like, or somebody put in the Facebook group, I'm dying for a podcast to cover this episode. So I was like, ooh, some juice happened. And I watched it, and I was like, nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, I think TJ had a very strong performance, which I think rallies the troops about wanting to hear the discussion. Like, his strong disapproval about almost everyone in that challenge was a sight to see. That was.
Did you think that was deserved?
I think TJ doesn't hate poor performance. He hates when people don't try, and there was a lot of, I'm not trying, I don't want to do this, I'm coming up with an excuse not to do it. So I 100% would expect that type of response from TJ in that spot.
That's fair. I thought he was a little harsh, considering that this was maybe one of the scariest challenges I feel like I've seen on the challenge, besides the, like, fake, we're going to electrocute you elimination.
I still wish they would bring that back as, like, no, we're actually doing this type thing. They should make that, like, the get out of the redemption out thing. Like, you want it, you're going to have to get electrocuted to get out.
Big advantage for Kara in that spot.
Yeah. Well, she's still getting by right now, so she's good.
But no, I thought this challenge, like, I'm no hero. I would not have attempted this challenge, I have to say. I'm not proud, but I'm honest.
Oh, I mean, when I, like, say, like, people are, like, lame for not, I would not let attempt complete anything, most of the things that they did. So I'm not giving people grief. I think TJ's mindset, the type of, like, stuff that he does, he is the type of person that can give other people grief.
Which, though, is, I think, funny, because this week, or at least timely, this week, somebody tweeted at TJ that, like, TJ should become a challenge, and he was like, oh, God, no. Implying, like, that he couldn't, like, perform well. So it is funny that TJ is the, he's, like, the podcast host of the challenge. Like, he's the one who's, like, really just sitting on his couch heckling everyone, which I love. It's a great spot for him.
Oh, that's the best spot to be. Now, who would ever want to do this stuff for real? Much better to commentate on that one day.
Who's the one who, like, was it Brittany? Who's the one who, or Kara? The people who tweet, like, oh, God, if I was only here, I would have loved to do that challenge. I'm so
that sounds like a Kara thing.
I'm most interested in talking about the Natalie and Kaylee bit. I guess I'm jumping the Amanda fight.
No, I think that was actually the Natalie thing. That was actually a very interesting conversation that, once it started, like, we all knew it could go in many, many different ways, and it seemed like it was going a positive way, and then it, like, hit a left and went very bad.
Yeah, because Kaylee is a just absolute awful person. Like, this interaction, as if we didn't already know that, really cements it. Like, this was, I think, the juxtaposition of the Amanda Kara incident followed by this was just absolutely relentlessly hard to watch for me personally.
It was, and again, like, it kind of came across, you know, it seemed like at first they were both making pretty level headed response. Like, it's not that you would sympathize with Kaylee, but you felt where she was coming from, where she was, like, so hurt and, like, felt so bullied and so, like, outcasted that, like, she was just lashing out at, like, anyone involved, which, to a degree, get, you don't get where she went with it, but you get that mindset. And then it seemed like they were both understanding each other and coming to like a rationalization to be able to move forward. And then it's hard to like understand why, I guess because Kaylee's just being a bad person to be why, but like why it then veered off terribly.
See, I wouldn't even give you that. Like, I see what you're getting at, but like, okay, what happened to Kaylee was right, and I agree. But the fact that she outs Natalie on Instagram, Natalie, and they tried to make it like Natalie was the big instigator there. Natalie was at best a bystander in that event, and they were doing it on behalf of Natalie because that's who she'd gotten in a fight with, if I remember correctly. And I will slam almost everyone this episode for being passive bystanders. And I'm not saying that that's okay, but if you're really so upset about the bullying, why come for Natalie alone? I know I'm trying to remember the Kayla drama where Mel like accused her of cheating on her boyfriend that season. Maybe Kaylee was involved in that, but she did not come as hard for anyone else. And I think it's just because, A, of the bananas incident, and I think Kaylee's like blaming the suitcase thing and Natalie's involvement in that because that's something you sympathize with her for. But also because she just didn't like Natalie and she had something on her that she would view as a negative to put out into the world. And yeah, But I'm just saying, I don't buy at all that it was any sort of, oh, I flew off the handle retaliation from a suitcase incident where you giggled as three other women actually did treat me like shit.
Yeah, and I think for Kaylee, she viewed Natalie as someone that she could easily take down. It's not someone that, you know, as you see from now, she doesn't really stand up for herself that well. So for Kaylee, she could, you know, sort of do whatever she wants and kind of like feel like, oh, the big strong girl by taking down Natalie because she's not going to really face much repercussion from her because she doesn't go off as like an Amanda would or a Kayla would or someone like that. So I think for her, this was like the perfect target for her.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't even draw the direct line between the suitcase thing, and I'm not buying the story where she's like, oh, but, like, I was bullied. Yeah, she was. She was treated horribly, but then she just was like, I don't like Natalie, and I'm going to call her a lesbian online. Like, you suck, Kaylee. And the fact that she just goes off on her again when I thought Natalie was handling it so well. First of all, Natalie apologizes to Kaylee, which is fine, but you got the full apology, and then you're going to immediately go to, I'm sorry, however, you did something really nasty to me. Like, she is just an immature child, and I really, really dislike it. Like, to the point where I can't even say, like, oh, it's a TV character like Shane or Marie or whoever we, like, poke fun at or say we don't like. Kaylee, I think, is a bad person, and she can come for me, you can at me. Like, someone needs to GD explain to her that not only did Kaylee rob her of her own, Natalie, of her own story and her privacy, but potentially, like, her safety. And it's just so unbelievable that Kaylee gets the last word on this. I guess MTV really gives Natalie the last word by the fade to black, like, go to hrc.org/coming out. But I was really screaming at my computer. Now I'm screaming at my computer again, but I was screaming at my computer watching the show.
I think, though, actually, they kind of gave Kaylee the last word because they showed, like, that if you have trouble coming out PSA. I think they then followed it up with if you're bullied PSA. I think the bullied came second. Correct. I might be wrong about that. But I think they had a bullied PSA in there also, which was, like, on Kaylee's side.
Do we assume that it wasn't about Amanda with Kara?
I mean, that's definitely possible.
I didn't even see notice that one if that happened.
I could be, you know what, it was over a week ago now, so I could be totally making it up, but I could have sworn there was a second PSA. I do love a good, like, the MTV PSAs are just, like, hysterical. Like, they do nothing to stop this except for put it up, like, a little slogan when everyone's already fast-forwarding to go to their commercial, so it's just quite comical for them to say.
But yeah, I was pretty upset, and that compiled with this incident between Amanda and Kara earlier. Like, these Lavender ladies, in this moment, really show themselves to be pretty bottom of the barrel with just the classic, you're a loser and no one likes you, 1-2 punch from Ashley and Amanda to Kara. I mean, are we really, we're similar ages to Amanda and Ashley, right? They have to be either our age or like a year younger.
I would think so.
Come on. Like, come on.
Ashley and Amanda are maybe like the two most unlikable people that aren't like so bad, like the Camilla level bad, but like just the perfect amount of unlikable that they can continually be rolled out on like these type of shows where you're not like disgusted by the sight of them, but like you kind of just want to keep seeing what else they have to say. At least that's for me. But like it's so entertaining for me to watch them year after year do this type of stuff when they're just such vile people, but it's like in an entertaining way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that assessment. Usually, I think Amanda's losing her entertainment value by the minute. And, like, I'll come for Amanda on the same grounds I come for Bananas on. Like, calling a girl fat and ugly, like, do better. Like, calling another woman a loser and no one likes you. And literally, she's like, all you have is your horses and your kickboxing classes. Like, okay. Like, all you have, Brian, is your job and your podcast and your friends and family. Like, you're a loser. You know, it was just like, oh, you're just calling out her hobbies? She doesn't have, like, interesting enough hobbies? Like, do better. If you want to be a villain, like, give me something interesting. This was just sad. I think it had very little entertainment value, low impact. The best, I actually liked Bananas and Kara being like, oh, no one likes you. Oh, no. So sad. Like, that was the most entertaining bit about this to me.
Yeah, that was Kara. This is what I've always wanted from Kara. Just, like, steer into this. Steer into this type of persona that they all throw at you, that, like, you're this weirdo outcast that just shows up and wins challenges. Like, just steer into that and try not to, like, be like, oh, no, actually, like, I am cool. I'm, like, I'm this or that. Just, like, be that. Like, this is why this was, like, likable from Kara, because she owned her self-being rather than trying to be something else. So this is like a great showing from Kara, as opposed to when she tries to like be Miss like tough girl on like Twitter and stuff like that. Like, that's a bad Kara. This is good Kara.
I also think we got good Marie in addition to good Kara, because I liked Marie stepping up to her Lavender Ladies. Like, this is, I've said this about nearly everyone in my life. I love Marie's. No one messes with my vendetta except for me. And I think Marie, more than Kara, and we'll see this later and on Twitter and everywhere, this isn't exactly a hot take, but Marie has really leaned into like embracing Kara in a way that Kara refuses to with Marie. And I don't just think it's because Kara is an asset. Like, I don't think it's just like, oh, I have a good partner, so I'll lean in. Like, I think Marie is really trying to be a good partner in terms of squashing their vendetta. Both in the game and now personally stepping to her own allies to protect her vendetta.
Yeah, I think totally. I think she recognizes that she needs Kara more than I think Kara needs Marie. And I think that also just comes from the fact that like Kara's already had success here. So for her, if she, you know, finishes like fifth or sixth and doesn't really win much quote unquote prize money from this, it's like whatever, not a big deal. For Marie, like, just like she probably feels like this is my actual chance to maybe win or place or do something because I have Kara as a partner. So I think she recognizes the importance of squashing the beef more than Kara.
Yeah, but I'm also trying to give her credit for like the beyond the game stuff, because I think this is unnecessary, right? Like, Marie doesn't have to tell Amanda and Ashley off in this situation to be a decent partner to Kara.
Yeah, but I also wonder if Marie wasn't Kara's partner, would she still be doing it?
Absolutely not.
Right.
But that's like Zach and Amanda would never like do anything for each other either. You know, like, it's like, I don't think that that's unique to Marie.
No, but that's why I'm not really going to give her like so much credit for being like a good person when she's only really being a good person because she pretty much has to be to do well.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm giving her credit for being a good partner.
Yeah. That's fair.
Above and beyond the call of duty, more so than Kara has ever done or will ever do. We're seeing a lot of that, I think, with the partnerships. We'll talk about Hunter and Ashley later on. But, like, there are some partners who are just not willing to work with their teammate in any capacity.
Yep.
So, I'll give Marie some props here. Sorry. I also thought she was very funny. The credit for my entertainment goes to Marie, Bananas, and Kara here. Absolutely nothing to do with Amanda and Ashley.
And what about Zach? I feel like Zach, if you're, like, kind of new to the challenge, you don't really remember Zach as, like, a really, like, hated person in the challenge world for some of the stuff that he's, like, said and done. I think if you're, like, two or three seasons in, you kind of see Zach as, like, oh, he's, like, you know, this big, strong guy. He's in love with Jenna. He does, like, pretty well in the challenge. He's like, a good guy. I feel like he's, like, really redeemed himself to a lot of people.
Like, he's redeemed himself or people forget? Because
people
I
forget.
Think that's a big difference. I don't think he's redeemed himself. But I agree that it's probably a little bit far for people to remember.
I think people forget, but also just, I mean, it feels like he is being a better person. Like, you don't really hear him saying, like, horrible things anymore. I mean, like, his relationship with Jenna seems to be going pretty smooth. Like, he doesn't really lash out on people on Twitter. Even, like, here, he's, like, trying to calm, I know he's, like, calming things down, trying to calm things down in a fight. Like, I think he does seem to be, like, evolving as a person.
Yeah, I think it also helps that his target is somebody that's coming off as pretty unlikable, like you said about Amanda. Like, when he's screaming in her face for her to shut up later in the episode, not great. But people kind of agree that she should be shutting up. She's being vile, so kind of gets away with it. But he's a big dude. She's a small woman. Like, he's yelling, shut up. At first, I was like, oh, that's not, that, there's that. But yeah, overall, I think you're right.
Yeah, well, that's good job by Zach. Sort of, a little.
You're not willing to say good job to Bree. I'm not willing to say good job to Zach. Hang it there.
So, anything else from last week besides Tony Bananas? When they, like, I mean, they set it up so early on the episode. Like, oh, we've never won. We have to win one. And then they get their first win going into this week.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll credit Bananas for somehow convincing Tony that he's an equal partnership. Like, I think Bananas has done a good job of, like, fake letting Tony take the Tony reins. Because the fact that Tony is saying we're like Batman and Robin, but we're both Batman, actually made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, that's very good. And they're in a good spot, as we all knew they would be, which is why them being paired together the first season after everything that went down was a big time bummer, because everyone knew this was going to be where this led.
But yeah, other than that, I also am realizing just now that I forgot about the drinking game for episode 12, but maybe I'll come up with it. Let's kick that to the end and see what happens.
At the end. The Burnsville one is getting a lot of play, I'll say that.
It's the only one getting
a lot of people all over the country.
Yeah, so thank you to the chief party officers for doing the Lord's work.
Yeah, shout out to them.
All right, so let's talk about Unhappy Days, which is the television episode for television title episode, television themed title for the episode.
Did you catch what was last week?
I did. It was You're the Worst.
There you go.
Which is just what, like, about everyone on the show being the worst?
Basically, yeah. I think it was probably Zach about Amanda being the worst. That's all right.
And what's Unhappy Days? Like, I feel like these two names are, ooh, some, like, uncomfortable
shit.
So
happens. Whose days are unhappy?
Mine?
Oh, man, yeah. This is a weird thing. It's supposed to use, like, Happy Days. Like, can you get a little bit more into this, like, millennium?
Oh, I didn't mind that. Okay, Henry Winkler just won his first Emmy, you know, come on.
Very relevant. Very relevant.
But we start with a night out, which you have to enjoy, right?
Yeah, I love me a good club scene with Bananas being the focal point of, you know, because he's never been in a position of power before, so it's fun to see him in one.
I mean, we're getting older here because, and by we I mean them, because the nights out are now just like strategizing at a bar.
I mean, that's usually what it is, right? I mean, especially with this one, because, like, the vote takes place right after it. So we've seen this. This is not, like, a rarity with strategy happening at a bar. Just because you get people drunk, you get people to commit to stuff.
Yeah, I'm not talking about, like, this episode. I'm talking about, like, where is, like, Thomas cheating on his girlfriend's car? Like, there's no, like, hookup action. There's no drama. I mean, we get Derek flirting with Devon strategically as, like, the closest we're coming to any sort of drama.
Yeah, we get a little bit. Well, that's why you can get all the drama when people get home, because, like, that's when Ashley shows up back at the house washed, and then her and Hunter get into drama.
The roster of people I think are bad people are growing. And don't worry, I put myself very close to the list of bad people. So
But
Hunter is, like, you know, it's like Kaylee 1, Hunter number 2. Headache 1 and Headache 2.
Hunter kind of really, like, he was, like, I think probably pretty low on, like, the power rankings of hated people, and he just, like, whoop, big jump.
I remember him being kind of Hunter-y on Are You the One. Not to this level. But this is not a, like, surprise feeling that Hunter would have. And we did talk about, I like, thought it was weird that he even cared so much about the hookup and the lying in the first place. And then we take it a step too far.
Yeah, so the fight is basically Hunter claims he just refuses to get over the lie that Ashley told him about her not hooking up with Kyle, and that it destroyed their partnership and destroyed their relationship. He can never forgive her. And he will go after her family if this takes down their game.
Yeah. And then he goes a little bit further than even the Kyle. Like, she gets drunk every night. I mean, what show are you on, Hunter? She's right. Not performing well on the challenges. But meanwhile, she, like, performed very well in the eating challenge. She got all the bags for them, and they won.
Yeah. Also, I mean, Ashley has a win. Where's Hunter's win? I don't see it.
Boom. I would love her to say that to him.
I don't know why she doesn't. Maybe she doesn't, or says it. I don't know. But I do actually. So do you think Hunter is actually just upset because he lied, or is there, like, some unresolved feelings between them, or is it because he's, like, fucking in here? What do you think his real motivations are?
I think Hunter is a crazy person. Like, I genuinely think, like, it's very difficult to get into the mindset of somebody where, like, something is off. And I think, like, Pony and Bananas talk about it, where, like, Hunter doesn't have strategy. Hunter's strategy is to just bash his head into the wall as hard as he can until he gets sent home by medical or he wins. Like, he doesn't have any finesse. He doesn't have any gameplay. It's just boom, boom, boom. I'll beat you. 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 And now he has to, like, have some strategic thinking. You have to be playing with your partner. It's like he can't just bash his head into the wall until he breaks through. And I just think we're seeing, like, the dark underbelly of Hunter when he has to get confronted with a challenge that he can't just yell at and say he'll win. I definitely do still think, in terms of your actual question about what upsets him about Ashley's action, I think it's a total control thing. I don't think he has feelings for Ashley. I think he wants to control her, and she did something that went against what he would say is the right thing to do. Whether or not he's right that she should have slept with Kyle from a game sense, the fact is she's a human being and she's an adult. She can do whatever the F she wants to do, and she doesn't owe you an explanation for anything, and he is having a control issue.
I think that's totally fair, and I think that definitely plays a part. I did actually just believe that it was all, because he seems like the type of guy that would get super pissed about being lied to. So for a while, I did believe it, which is why his, like, I will go after her family was, like, just, like, I guess when I heard that. I just didn't think he would say something, because it's just, like, a preposterous thing to say. Like, I will go after her family. Like, this is a challenge. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I mean, no, of course, that was ridiculous. But that's why I think it's this scene took it beyond the, oh, she lied to me. It's like, she's keeping me from winning. I'm going to win. I'm here. I'm a bull. I just win, win, win. I'm a young buck, and that's all I want to do is win. And she's drinking, and she's sleeping around, and she's not performing well in challenges. She's taking this money. She's taking the food out of my mouth. And he's just, it's like a next level. That's like when we can't understand why she'd say, I'm coming for your family. It's because we're not like that. Like, we can't get to his level of psychosis that would, like, lead him to saying that.
Yeah. That was something. That's a partnership that is not being remedied by Team Together.
Which, P.S., the only thing costing him his game is him. Like, carrying on like this to this level does not make anyone in the house want to work with you at all. Like, this is definitely, I think, doing more damage than any strategic damage done by Ashley having slept with Kyle.
Yeah, especially when you're supposed to be being relied on within an alliance and you have someone who, like, can't be relied on. And it's like, well, I don't know where they're going to, they're both going to lie. We don't know what they're going to do. So, yeah, it does not help their situation.
And any target they had was because of Hunter. Hunter comes in as a mercenary and says that he's going to go after Bananas. Like, says Bananas isn't happy to see me. Like, he's not making any social bridges here.
Nope. He isn't. He's most definitely not.
And this is what upset me, and, like, I'm interested to hear your perspective about this. It comes up a lot with Big Brother when people are saying racist, homophobic, horrible things, and nobody says anything, and it's like, why aren't you saying something? And then the flip side of that is, you could say something after the show. It's a social game. It's strategy. You just have to bite your tongue and, you know, they'll get theirs in the end. Here we get Brad. Like, Hunter is, like, completely slut-shaming her to the point where he's calling her a slut, and I'm saying all these other unacceptable things. And Brad's disgusted, and he's saying that in confessional. And we get, it's nice to see a man speaking up in the confessional. We also get Ashley talking about the double standard. I thought that was treated well. But what, all of these men are just sitting there. I mean, Nelson is promoting it, but everybody else is sitting there in silence. Do you think there was any obligation that Brad really felt this disgusted that he should have said something to Hunter to stop him in that moment?
I think this is different because a lot of this was Hunter just venting to the guys, right? Like, I mean, I guess Ashley could sort of hear, but it wasn't like him yelling in her face. I think there's a difference where that was, there was like, if he was in her face saying all this, I think that's where you probably feel obligated to step in. But if it's just someone venting in a group without her being there, and it's like, it's not like she's like feeling the immediate impact, I don't think in the game situation you're under an obligation to step in and create a target for yourself. I think you just let him go off his hinges.
Yeah, no, I'm torn. I get that distinction, but I also think he is dragging her reputation through the mud on national television. Like, I think the things he's saying about her are damaging. And I think from Brad's perspective, he's always talking about, you know, being an example for his son, to just let a group of men stand silent while another man talks about a woman like that, to me, was troubling. But I understand not wanting to ruin your game. But unlike Big Brother, I mean, what's Hunter really going to do for your game? Like, in this case, I really didn't think there was a lot of social capital to lose by saying, all right, Hunter, you know, that's enough. Like, go to bed. Like, you know, don't be talking about her like that. Like, you've crossed the line. So I was a little disappointed, but not surprised to see nobody say anything.
Yeah, but that's why I think him saying it in confessional is a good spot just to see, because it shows that, like, I think if this is like, you know, this is the real world where it's just like people living in a house with no real voting or game, like it's just people living. I think like it would just be so much easier to stay in that type of situation because it's like it's basic to quote unquote like the real world where there's no strategy involved, like you just do whatever. So I think him saying it in confessional is the kind of the perfect spot to say it in this type of show.
Yeah, I mean, it's better than nothing, but a lot of people, like Brad was retweeting a lot of like, Brad, you're amazing. Like, what an incredible thing. Like, thanks for standing up. Like, you're the best. And, like, I'm not willing to give him those accolades for saying Hunter's a trash person in the confessional.
Yep.
I agree. I think what he said was well said and true. But I'm sure, or I hope, that there were piles of confessionals to have used in that spot of people saying Hunter is disgusting, besides Nelson.
Right. So what did you make of – so the only little strategy we got this week was from Shane trying to come up with his game plan that seemed to leave the Lavender ladies confused. Did you understand where he was coming from with his strategy?
I didn't when I watched, and we did get a lot of questions about that, but there were some tweets that shed a little bit of light on it. I don't know how true it is. Hello?
I'm here. I was playing a little music while you were gathering the tweets.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something. Okay.
Oh, no, I thought you were gathering the tweets.
No, so Bree said that Shane predicted this being that they would get voted in. His genius plan was created to protect us. He sacrificed, # things you don't see. And then I'm looking for, I hope I pulled it. Now you can do your, so we have this. Paulie tweeted it. I don't think I pulled it. Megan Elizabeth, thank you to our digital communications manager who is now safe and sound, I hope, from the hurricane, and thoughts to everyone who's dealing with that. But she returned to give us tweets this week, and I didn't pull it because I'm the worst. But I think Paulie basically explained, and this is what Marie was getting at, that Shane's strategy was to prevent two members of the Lavender Ladies from going against each other in elimination, and stacking the votes so that, I guess, Shane and Nelson would have to go in and then wouldn't be going against, like, the, he kept it so that they'd have their pick of someone who wasn't a Lavender Lady, as opposed to if a Lavender Lady burned votes on them and then they had to go against each other.
Yeah, I think that's 100% what he's doing. He knew he was banking on the two votes from Tony and Tony Bananas coming his way. So the only way to stop anyone else from going in was making sure those were the only two votes going on in. So that way, he had free reign to who they were picking. So,
which is pretty noble.
Yeah.
A lot of people wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there was someone that he would have wanted to go up against, and he could have, like, twisted around, and let's say he wanted to go up against Kara and Maria or something like that. He could have spun it to do that. So it's a pretty alliance strong move to fall on the sword. Although it's not really falling on the sword, because it's not like it was up to him, like the votes to Tony and Chain votes, Tony Bananas votes wouldn't go to him. It was more so just letting him pick his opponent. So, but it's decently noble, I guess.
It's noble in the sense that, like, his alliance members are probably people you'd rather go against.
Yeah, but then it's clear from how this played out that he didn't want that to begin with. Because if you wanted the easy pick, he could have just picked it anyway. So it was clear he wanted to do this type of big move to get out of strong team. So
he right.
was able to do it.
But you could do like a more cowardly play. But then you're leaving the Bananas and Tony. So I was impressed by this from Shane.
Yep.
In terms of the vote structure, I was a little bit surprised that Marie and Kara just kind of goes along with this plan so easily. When wouldn't Kara have said that this is what was going to happen to Tony and Bananas? Maybe Tony and Bananas didn't know about this and they didn't care because, like they said in confessional, anyone who goes out is a win for them.
Yeah, and also, I mean, they said like they weren't really telling Kara where their votes were going. Like, I guess he could have been figured out where they were going, but from everything the show indicated, she did not know exactly where the boats were going.
I'm talking about the reverse. Like, does Kara tell Tony and Bananas where the Lavender boats are going? Because Marie was in on this.
Right. I guess so. Or maybe is Kara not as... I guess Marie would tell her exactly where all the boats going down, they would have to know the plan. I would say everything that happened probably was not a surprise to anyone. I think everyone really knew where
right.
it was going down, and then Bananas was cool with Shane picking his opponent.
There was no true surprises in the vote per usual. I guess the surprise is that Hunter went along with Ashley's plan after all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for a lot of seasons, especially with guy girl pairs, you see the guy for the most part dominating like the strategic thoughts, the voting and everything. This is kind of been a flip where a lot of the votes in guy girl pairs are spearheaded by the girls of the pair, which is kind of interesting to say.
Yeah, no, that is really interesting. And I think that's because the Lavender Ladies are such a strategic presence this season. And we usually don't see like a dominant group of, I guess last season we did. But it was more women-on-women violence between the factions of Jemmy and everyone.
What was even the format last season? I don't even remember. Was it individual?
I just remember the sides of the house when Tori... There was a lot of... That's really when Marie started playing I'm protecting everyone, so I'm protecting
right.
no one.
Yeah. All right, so here's what we get. So the three teams got two votes. Shannon Nelson, Jack Amanda, Jose, and... Yvonne, and then Nana's and Tony voting Shane and Austin.
Yeah, that was a very low energy announcement of what was probably the most exciting elimination we've had this season.
For me?
Oh, Tony and Nelson. I'm sorry. I said Brad and Kyle. I'm so excited I jumped the gun.
No, yes. Then the exciting part is Shane and Nelson turning around and voting in Brad and Kyle, which was very exciting and very unexpected.
I forgot the power team got yet another power and got the
yeah, three votes.
But yes.
A three vote power team.
Eliz Bonk wants to know this week, if you were Shane and Nelson, who would you have picked to go against in the elimination?
So it's, you know, I think if I was them, my first gut instinct would be like, let's just pick Kara and Marie. They're probably like the easier team to knock out. But I do like a lot their move here, just not even results oriented, just because of the format of this season, where you're probably not going to beat Kyle and Brad in a final. So your best chance is to knock them out. And even if you lose here, you're going to the Redemption House. So you clearly have another shot. And just looking at the teams in the Redemption House, I think Shane Nelson would have a pretty good chance of coming back. So I think this is like the perfect opportunity to try to take a swing at one of the teams that you feel you probably cannot beat in a final.
Yeah, I mean, no way if I'm Shane Nelson would I have done this. This is a great move, very exciting. I'm happy they did it. Even if they lost, it was exciting. But I wouldn't go, like, if you were Shane, you'd go Marie and you'd burn that relationship.
Well, who would be, so I guess the easiest would be putting in Davon again, just going up against them.
Which then, I guess, shows you how this really wasn't, like, that killer move. I think pound for pound, Brad and Kyle are, like, 300 times a stronger team, more threatening team than Jose and Davon. But it's not like Jose and Davon are a layup. So it wasn't, like, that crazy of a step up to take. But in terms of rocking the boat, rustling feathers, definitely would have been an easier sell, Jose and Davon, because they screwed Shane already. In terms of going back to the Redemption House, this is what's hard about the Redemption House evaluation. Yeah, when you look at it from a sense of, oh, I could beat everyone in this house, or I'm a better team than everyone, fine. But you really need to have a friend that's going to pick you or be the weakest team so that you get picked to stay.
Yeah, but you also...
I didn't explain that well. But
it totally makes sense. No, it does. But the fact that, like, going to the, it's not a... Like, the past Redemption House is where you're guaranteed to have a chance to fight to win. You get a little bit lucky, but at least you have that kind of in your back pocket, where in other teams where if you just go for a swing and a miss, big move, like Jordan going up to Bananas, he loses, he's just done. At least now, you know, you lose, but you still have 25% chance, however 20% how many people are in the Redemption House. And at least you have an out. If you're giving yourself an out by going after them here.
Right. Plus you have Kaylee and Tam, who are probably, I would say, I mean, they're definitely not going to pick Polly and Natalie.
Right.
So you have that Nelson relationship.
And doing this, you're showing to your alliance members, like, oh, this is how much we won't go against you. We're not voting for any of you. So now let's say next week, you know, let's say Kara and Marie do go the Redemption House. I think there's a pretty good chance then they would turn around and pick them. So you're kind of like gaining favors by people still in the house if someone else goes ahead and joins you next week.
And you get to reveal what a gutless loon Kyle is. I've already disliked Kyle this season, but my God, this reaction from Kyle, as though Nelson and Shane owed anything to them for bypassing them before. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Kyle gets so indignant. Like, oh, I had so many opportunities to go for them and did it. That's nothing.
And I also did not realize that Kyle had never been in an elimination before. I didn't realize I think he finished third last year, right? So he made a final without doing elimination. I did not realize that. So
Kyle had an excellent social game that I think he's gotten a little cocky with this season. And the other advantage I think you get from calling out Kyle and Brad here over Jose and Davon is that Kyle and Brad were absolutely not prepared in the slightest. I don't think they would have even put a 1% chance that they were going in. You got to stay ready in Armageddon, bro.
You do. And again, I think that's also a great point, especially for Kyle, who has never been in an elimination before. I think there is a level of preparedness that you need to have going in. You've never been been up against the wall before. He's never faced the opportunity of going home. So this is all roads are pointing to this being like the perfect spot to do this.
And then they pretty much have like a Big Brother challenge. And I don't say that meaning it's a carnival game. But it's a pretty big equalizer here, not the perfect opportunity and the perfect challenge to beat Brad and Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, it's an equalizer in the fact that it takes away, like, strength. But, I mean, it is like an athletic thing. So it's not like, you know, when you would hit the people with the swords blindfolded, which is completely a free thing. Like, this does require some, like, you know, balance and skill and athletic ability to do well. So it's like the perfect equalizer, but it's not like, you know, toss anyone in there and you know, they can win. Like, you do have to be pretty athletic to do it, which is why I was stunned to see Nelson actually do well. Because I didn't think he would, like, have this in him to be able to, like, take 3 or 4 steps on a treadmill with it going the opposite way and do well.
Wait, what is hitting people blindfolded with the sword?
You don't remember that when, like, you're in, like, the circle and you, it's like fencing, but you're blindfolded and your partner has to tell you, like, where to swing?
Oh, I thought you meant that was, like, a carnival game.
No, that's I mean, maybe, but at least for a challenge.
Oh, all right. I was like, I just went to a state fair. They didn't have that. very terrifying. But no, yes. And I don't mean as an equalizer in the sense that it takes no athletic ability, because I was really annoyed when Kyle was like, we could beat them in any athletic or mental competition. You just had an athletic and mental competition. Like, I think this really did emphasize teamwork. You had to think about it. The timing had to be perfect. You had to be athletic, agile. I meant it more as like, nobody would be good at this. Like, big and strong does not make you good at this. Being a man doesn't make you good at this.
And this is also like what we see from most challenge eliminations. I mean, most challenge eliminations are not, you know, one person lines up and one, another, you try to run through each other and get to the other side. Like, that's maybe once a season we see that. A lot of them are these agility type, balance type things that do equalize. Because that's, I mean, that's more what we want to see. Like, especially when you're a mismatched parent, you don't want to see something that's so slanted towards one side. So this is, I mean, for Kyle to say, oh, this is some stupid carnival game, like, this is what the challenge is. Like, more so than even most other stuff. This type of challenge is exactly what the challenge is.
Yeah, no. And you know, like, it, even though the challenge isn't slanted to one side, it ended up being very slanted to one side. And you know, like, which team is going to win when the only cliffhanger they can even do is 7-3 when they go to commercial. Like, oh, okay, I really was expecting a comeback from 7-3.
Yeah, it was never close. Challenge editors do quite like magic work trying to get things to be looking as close as possible, and even they couldn't make this look even remotely close.
And then when I thought the grapes were only sour in the UK and that Kyle had been feeding on them, bananas is like quelling their celebration, like act like they've been here before. Oh, really? Because chanting "it's Tony time" when you win something is really good sportsmanship.
Also, I mean, I get Brad is probably with them and Kyle's like whatever, but I mean, this is great for Bananas and Tony. Like, this was one of the major threats to them in a final. They're now gone. Like, I know, like, Shane's like going after them, but I mean, looking at, like, this is a great result for Bananas and Tony.
It was a confusing statement from Bananas, especially because he had said earlier, like, anybody who goes is good for them. But yeah, I just thought, like, him being like, act like you've been here before. I'm sorry. Like, if you had beaten CT in Bananas' backpack, you would have been cheering like that too. Like, if for Nelson and Shane to beat the, I would say, definitely top three front runners, if not the front runner of the season, you better lose your mind if you care about anything.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
Ironically, Tony is the only one who is just like, yeah, Kyle and Brad should have performed better. Thank you, Tony.
National Tony. The whole new Tony.
And we get a nice little gift left behind by Kyle for Cara. Elizabeth wants to know, does Kyle have feelings for Cara Maria, or was he just effing with her feelings with the ring/necklace?
So, my thought is, I think he just did that by accident, right? Because he didn't know he was going into elimination. Unless he got to, like, tell the producer, can you leave this on Cara's bed? So I feel like he might have just left it there by accident.
How do you accidentally leave your necklace and ring on your ex-girlfriend's pillow?
But like,
I get what you're
saying,
but there's just no way that that's an accident.
It's just so, because in his mind, there was no way he was going into elimination, right? So they were just going to come home, come back to the house, and then his car was going to see that, and then they were just going to beat it. Like, it was just, it made no sense. It just, like, screams to be like, oh, wait, you tell the producer, can you do this? Since I'm gone. If that's what it seemed like.
Yeah, no, well, that's fine, too, if he said, like, can you leave this for Cara? But I don't think that's much more likely, and pretty much the same as him leaving it, than him doing it by accident.
Like, I was just so confused by it that I couldn't even, like, think about it.
Like, he only took off limited jewelry. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I'll just leave this here. It's like, he has, like, 100 rings and necklaces. I'll just take off this one and then this one ring, put it on her pillow for safekeeping, go to the challenge, not compete, and then come back and grab it.
I was just so confused by the whole thing and the logistics of it that it just didn't make sense to me that I couldn't. It exploded my brain.
All right, so let's just accept that he left it there. But let's theorize that he left it there with some sort of meaning. my reaction to that was just like, isn't this just dating today? Like, I know you're out of the game, Brian, newly engaged man, but dear God, this back and forth with Cara and Kyle, sleeping with other people, being mad at each other, I don't even care, pretending you don't like each other, coming back to each other, have your friends being like, so he's not good for you, stay away from him, having the American public hate you for it, which obviously happens in any relationship. And then when he's leaving, when it's too late to reconcile, here's my jewelry that you know means a lot to me.
Yep.
No note, no words, just a big ugly ring.
I mean, they're 100% going to hook up again, right? Like in the offseason, like that's like a guarantee.
Well, this whole Pauly thing is not, I mean, the Twitter violence between Pauly and Cara and Kyle, I just don't know.
Well, I can say for quite certainty that the Pauly-Cara relationship is not going to last. So I'll say whenever that blows up, Cara and Kyle will have a thing again.
Now, I don't know that they're calling it a relationship. I think they've both been very much like, we have sex and it's so much fun and we're spiritual and I ride my horse and go do my kickboxing and Amanda thinks I'm a loser.
I write my Upweekly column.
Yeah, which I don't read, but don't worry, I've been on Polly's Upweekly column.
Oh,
U.S. Weekly.
U.S. Weekly, of course.
All right. I thought there was a big dud, a big letdown in the redemption house when Kyle came.
Big time, though. We got him strolling down the stairs, cuts the commercial, waiting for chaos to ensue, and then they're just pounding around the couch, doing nothing, catching up on life.
I didn't pull these questions because they happened. I saw them right before we went on. But the general gist, and people want to know, I think Will from America wrote in about this. Like, is Pauly more likable this season? Like, should people feel bad for liking him? Like, where do you stand now on Pauly?
I mean, Pauly's in any way likable because A, he's an underdog, and B, he's just not been in the house. Like, you see such small glimpses of him, and it's all like, when I get back in, I'm going to get all these people who got me, and I'm coming for them, and I'm bred for this, and I'm going to win. And that's all you get from it. So if he was in the house doing, like, horrible stuff, people would once again hate Paul.
I also think the editing is going to want you to like Paulie, though. So I don't know. I agree with you. That was exactly my take, that, like, limited Paulie is a great amount of Paulie. Like, this is Paulie's best spot in terms of likability.
Great spot for him.
Tom Palmer says, if I haven't missed the podcast yet, which you didn't, which redemption house did you prefer? 1.0 with all the confessional queens or 3.0 with all the drama and tension?
I prefer 0.0 when it did not exist.
1.0 with limited interaction with redemption house. Like, I think now that we're, like, getting full scenes, once I see the redemption house going out, like, when did Anissa and Corey, like, go on a date while they were in the redemption? Like, I'm out of
the house. That was so wild. That was so stupid. Why did that happen? Oh, my God.
That's, like, when you're having to make main house level content out of the redemption house, I'm out.
Yeah. So, do you think this is the last edition
of this podcast? What do you
think? This, like, the person who comes out of this new iteration of the Redemption House. Is that it? Are we done?
Interesting. The cynic in me wants to say it depends who comes back and who remains. I think we should be done with three. Especially we're going to get another set of mercenaries and we're going to keep more people coming back into the house.
So right now we're at 7 people. Oh,
17
teams left. Do you think these mercenaries are the same rules as Hunter, where they can re-enter the game? Or do you think these are old school? You think, okay, right, that's a load of crap. You show up, final 7, you can just, like, join the game. That is, like, obviously bad.
So we're going to come back with 9. I mean, look, I want to know the story, right? Like, is this a way because Devin called and was like, I'm ready to come back now, and they wanted him on the season, and, you know, his dad passed away? Or, like, was there a sub for the mercenary? Like, did someone get bumped from Corey's team? Was there only going to be one set of mercenaries? Because clearly this was not as it was intended to go off.
What do you mean we're going to get up to 9? We're at 7. We're not going to get back above.
Right. We're going to get the mercenaries are going to come in, and then the team's going to come back from redemption.
But we always lose a team in the process. We're never going to have more than 7 again.
Well, when someone comes back for redemption, we don't lose a team.
But so we have seven. Someone's going to be voted in to face the mercenary. We're still going to be, after that, we're still going to be at seven. I guess we can back up to eight.
Yes. So we're going to get back up to eight at least. Yes.
At most eight. Maybe if they do another, there'd be four teams. Right now there's three redemption. After next week, there'll be four. Then that's usually when they do come back. So yeah, so probably we'll get back up to eight. We hope that's probably the last of it. I would guess not. So I would assume there's probably going to be one more at like final four.
I think you're right about that. Do we know if the mercenaries lose, do they go to redemption?
That's what they said about when Hunter.
Right. It's been a while. Okay. I wonder if Tony going to be a mercenary with Corey?
That's possible.
Maybe
they weren't going to have second mercenaries, and then when Kevin was able to, they brought him in. Possible.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this challenge because I'm dying. The guy could see Us Weekly blog and next in my notes, and I'm dying to get to it. So let's just get to the challenge here.
This one's caged in, very survivor-like. Got a partner locked in a cage. Someone has to run out and grab a branch to knock down a key from the top of the cage. And then you run out and solve a puzzle. A little did they know, except for Amanda, that the answers to the puzzle for the questions are in the cage with them.
This was a very survivor-esque challenge for me. Like, I felt CBS inspo all over the challenges for these two, but to fashion a stick to get a key to get out of a cage is literally a survivor challenge. And were you surprised? What surprised you more? That Amanda was the only one who seemed to notice the graffiti, or that anybody noticed the graffiti?
I'm surprised that anyone noticed. I think I would have more faith that Bananas would have noticed if he was in the cage, not like running out. I think that's something he would have picked up on, being locked in the cage. I think I give him that credit, but I'm very surprised and impressed by Amanda coming up with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not a very challenged thing to have to, like, you know, pay attention to stuff around you. Ever. But yeah, at that point, like, you're just in there waiting for someone to come back with a stick. You might as well do some reading.
Yeah, and to them, like, I don't think I would have picked up on it either. I think you just saw it on, like, you're up against the wall, there's graffiti there. Like, that's just, like, on life. So, I wouldn't have really noticed it either, especially because it wasn't, like, very clear. Like, this would, like, you were supposed to solve a puzzle. For them, they're probably thinking, like a slide puzzle type thing, not, like, questions type thing. Like, I don't really blame anyone for not thinking the answers to a puzzle were on the graffiti wall.
I did notice Sylvia runs out of the cage and has like three numbers memorized, but she's like 10. Like she says something to herself. And I think that makes the most sense, like to try to count things and expect it to be numbers. I mean, this wasn't a puzzle, but to me it was fine. It was a quiz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, I'm fine with it. Yeah, this is a fine challenge. I didn't mind it. I much prefer these that are like simple, direct, and it's not like a lot of repeating stuff. Like when we see a lot of these other challenges. So I was totally fine with the challenge.
I also didn't like that you really only just needed one large stick. Like in Survivor, for anyone who doesn't watch Survivor, the challenge I'm talking about is they have to like tie together sticks from the inside and shimmy them out to grab, like keep the pull, as Jeff would say, long and strong enough to reach the keys like out by the cage, not above you. I think it's garbage that it was just like, oh, if you get a really big stick, you knock it off right away.
I also think there's another psychology class that you could do about what level of stick people brought back with how people bring back trees and other people would just bring back a very useful stick. I think there's definitely a psychology class to be done with that.
That's amazing. Like Hunter being the only one to bring back the one with the leaves. What is he hiding? You know?
There's something about like a BuzzFeed quiz, which challenge stick are you?
Which stick bringer are you?
Yeah.
I would get like, you're still stuck in the box.
You're the Murray.
And then at the end, like we see Zach and Amanda win. Good on them. Yep. We see Hunter just sort of waltzing back. This is like editor's revenge for Hunter being the worst because they basically make Ashley the hero here. He did tweet, I have a lot of Hunter tweets, so I gotta scroll through. He said, editing is a beautiful thing, is it not? I had to run back 4 times because she told me to go find the wrong question. But whatever, at this point, I'm effing miserable and I don't want to compete anymore being her partner. For the first time in my life, I lost my edge. This depressed emoji.
Aw, poor Hunter.
Yeah, I mean, it did. The editing did him dirty then, because it looks like he just like couldn't be bothered to run. But I was happy with that. I think he deserves a little karma.
Yeah. So that's what happens when you go up there with someone's family. You get fully edited about your endurance skills.
Anything else to say about the challenge before we get to the U.S. Weekly?
Devon and Jose continue to be a delight as a team. The cut of when Devon's like already running out and Jose, what's happening? That was very funny.
I did like that. Let's just leave that as a final word. We'll scrap the social media for the week.
What about the punishment? About Cara and Marie getting a punishment. You like this edition?
No. I think they just need a reason not to stop the challenge when one person wins, you know? Like, I love how he's like, you guys don't seem motivated enough to not lose. Like, come get out of here.
I did like Marie's spin zone, because I think that is something you could play up. Like, oh, we're already getting a punch for next week. There's no reason to vote us in. I do like that logic. I don't know if they'll push for that, but there is logic there.
Yeah. I don't think anybody's going to care, because not like they think Marie and Cara could possibly win anyway.
Nope. But good on Marie for thinking that.
God, I don't have a drinking game thing from this whole podcast.
Oh, no. did I have one? I don't really have one either. I kind of forgot to think of one.
All right. Well, we make the rules. How about that? Take a drink every time you're frustrated with us listening to the podcast. Sure, a lot of that happens to us.
Boom. Anytime we veer off a horrible course.
Take a drink. That doesn't have to be a horrible course. We've disappointed you. We don't have a drinking game. Take a drink.
Anytime we miss a week, you have to drink. Oh, wait, that was last week. Okay. Now everyone has to drink.
All right, let's get to the Twitter and the weekly. I pulled from last week too, so got double trouble for the Pauly, because I had to go back. Also, no five star reviews because we weren't here, so that makes sense. But we're here now, so you should be too. You can go to robatthewebsite.com/challenge iTunes. That's it.
Is there?
All right, so I have Pauly's take on Natalie and why, if anyone didn't watch Big Brother, why Pauly and Natalie are vendettas. This is what I pulled from last week. In Big Brother, I didn't like Natalie because of her methods of evicting me in a game were by lying, which is perfectly okay to do in Big Brother, and saying that I made her feel, quote, uncomfortable. A phrase that should never be thrown around lightly, because it could ruin someone's character outside the game. That was all one sentence. To be fair, I couldn't be too mad, because my method of trying to eliminate her was to say she was a gold digger who manipulates men for her own personal gain with no intention of ever being with them. I also said she was as fake as those things on her chest. These are also things that shouldn't be said, because it can ruin someone's character outside the game. That's it. That was just some reflection from Pauly. All right, so I pulled a quote from the opening of this week's Us Weekly blog from Pauly. One sentence, and then I get to the part that he's referencing. So he does like a little spoiler, and then no need to scroll through, because I grabbed it. But you should read the whole thing. This is a teaser. This recap is a very, very special recap, because before the end of it, I will be giving a prestigious, or maybe not so prestigious, award to one of the greatest confessional gangsters of all time. All right. Then I was like, well, I got to see this prestigious or maybe not so prestigious award. So I'm have to take a moment and laugh again as I write this piece on Kyle's entrance to the Redemption House. Every single person in that house, his partner Brad included, watched him welcome me down the stairs with open arms, a hug, and some joke like, quote, I guess I can't say anything about your elimination record, Nate. So to see his confessional muscles was very entertaining. It only reassures my assessment of him. Sorry. Oh, okay. It only reassures my assessment of him being a fake tough guy. Congratulations, buddy. You haven't helped your case at all, which is why you, my friend, get the award for being one of the greatest confessional gangsters of our generation.
What an honor.
You can dress up like a lion all you want, but I see you for what you are, .. a sheep. Sorry. I hope this is funny to someone else. It's just like the little, like, I have to take a moment, and it only reassures my assessment. And I just love it.
He's one of a kind. He's rest with us.
I also think that you should be nominated for one of the greatest podcast gangsters of our generation for the earlier mentioned lying about knowing the outcome of the challenge.
I was bred for that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so we have some Twitter stuff. Hunter says, I've never once slut-shamed anyone in my entire life. We literally just all watched you do it. I don't care if that girl had sex with 1 million guys. That has nothing to do with why I didn't speak to her. It had everything to do with lying. I'll take that to my effing grave. Okay, Hunter. Marie, and this is where I was thinking of this, but I didn't want to allude to the tweet. Cara Maria so confuses me. Marie tweeted, would you look at that? Cara and I getting knowledge from both sides. And MTV wrote, we love a double agent. And then Cara wrote, that's a hard no. I was always with Tony and Johnny Banana. I don't roll with any of the people who name their friend group. Marie is doing the hard job dealing with that end of the house. I read it in the way that I imagine her saying it.
I can't just it's a compliment. Just take the compliment. You guys can get knowledge from both sides. Just be done with it. Cara's the worst.
Yep. And also, I love how she specifies that she doesn't roll with anyone who names their side, which would be fine if I didn't find out today that Tony has merch. I don't know if you know that. He has TonyTime.store.
Right name.
Most of the merch is Tony Time and like Dad Strom. But he's revealed. Time to pick a side, # Team Benoni. And it is a picture of a clock with bananas for the hands of the clock. The numbers, instead of numbers on the clock, it says Tony Time and says Team Benoni. So if you don't roll with anyone naming their alliance, you should probably roll alone.
Wait, so the clock has what?
Where there are letters, where the numbers are supposed to be in a clock, it says Tony Time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hands of the clock, as I'm gesturing as the hands of a clock, but you can see, are bananas. Like, not okay. The human bananas.
Right. All right. I mean, that's clever enough.
It's not clever at all, but I'm not digging Tony's entrepreneurial spirit. You can view the merch, purchase the merch, support the cause. Go to the college fund at TonyTime.store. But the fact that Cara is like tagging them and there's like above it because people have named their friend group, and you know, check yourself before you wreck yourself, Cara.
Cara's wrecked yourself many times.
Ashley said, believe me, anytime I cry or complain, it's shown. It's been my character. Not saying it's made up. I've seen everyone break down in the house. And very few get shown. If I was, quote, threatening and crying, it'd be shown. That's true. I enjoyed this from Angela. I miss her already. I'm going to let you finish, Kyle, but my panties on Johnna Banana's pillows was the best departing gift of all time.
Angela's a delight. Can't wait for her next year or whenever she comes back.
MTV. You know what? I don't even want to give voice to Hunter. I'm done reading Hunter's tweet about him. And then Marie tweeted a photo of her and Shane and said, Shane was my sister all season. Nothing will ever change that. He is truly good human, and I will vouch for it. Editing has a funny little way of picking who's your favorite. Shane is mine. So I guess that answers if this is like the breakdown of Shane and Marie.
There you go. We're waiting on the edge of our seat back.
And it's the perfect segue to my favorite tweet from the week, which is Shane. So, all right. So I got tagged in a lot of times listeners. Thank you very much. will tag us in tweets to like alert me to the Twitter drama. So they'll just reply to whatever the drama thread is with my handle. And I went to look at it, and it was like, it was a chain tweet, and it was like, you can't look at this. The tweets are protected. I was like, did she block me? And then I was like, no, because I can hit follow. So I guess I wasn't following him. And because we have Megan Elizabeth doing such a great job, I don't always follow everyone from the season because I get the tweets sent to me, whatever. I see enough Shane tweets where I thought I followed him. Marie retweets, I guess. So I followed him. I go to class, as I often do, and I come back to a notification that Shane has tweeted, so Allie is finally following me, ... Miss Hard to Impress herself, laugh cry emoji, tilted laugh cry emoji, okay. Just know I can pick your voice out in a 10,000 person crowd. Whoa.
Now that'll be a challenge. Let's make that an elimination.
I didn't know if this was a threat or a compliment. Sounded pretty threatening. I enjoyed it. Look, anyone that can take some shit thrown at them and give it back with what I assume is a laugh based on the emoji issues, I'm on board with. This is the most I've probably liked Shane in a few seasons.
Yeah, this is your,
so
to see. Your Twitter gangster moment.
My Twitter gangster moment, but I'm not so sure I'm thrilled about the why he needs to pick my voice out in a 10,000 person crowd. Clearly, he doesn't know me at all because I sit behind my computer. I don't go out in 10,000-person crowds. I feel like I'm safe for now.
I mean, he's an avid listener. Your voice is ingrained in his head.
I wrote back, Miss Hard to Impress is the nicest thing I've ever been called, which is true. So I'll ignore the threat. Take it on the chin.
All compliments.
No press. All press is good press.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
we are the all-press people.
I texted you about this. I was like, maybe I shouldn't have sent it to you. I should have just revealed on the podcast. Pardon but
me, yeah.
I think this is my yawn that bitch moment where, like, a person on the show tweets something confusing to you.
Right. It's fun when that happens.
All right.
Especially when you're not sure if it's, like, a compliment or if I should be scared.
Yeah, no, this was a full yawn that bitch. So thanks to Shane for listening.
So I'm sure Shane already does, but everyone else can subscribe to our podcast at robiswebsite.com/challenge iTunes. You can follow me at @CullenBryan_.
Shane's not handle, but his name on Twitter at the time of the tweet is Nelson's partner. Should I change my name to Brian's co-host?
That's actually very funny. If I say that's very funny.
Depending on the day, like I'll be today, yeah. I'm Brian's co-host. Tomorrow I'm Adam's co-host. So that's a great plug. You should also be listening to RE1's
graphic. Yeah. Subscribe it. You can subscribe all in one bush, right? It all feeds to the same thing. So it's double dose of value for one subscription.
Maybe Shane listens. What if Shane doesn't even know we do a challenge podcast and he listens to just coincidentally the RE1 wrap up and this has nothing to do with anything?
That would be hysterical.
All right, you can follow me at @LashTweets, and you can follow Shane at Shenanity.
Shenanity. Worst to come.
There you go.
We'll be back next week. Until then, have a good one.